These men, called roughnecks, are part of three crews that keep this $2 million rig running around the clock. Also on the crew is a driller and a supervisor called a tool pusher. Here in East Texas, they're drilling down 2.5 miles, looking not for oil, but for a resource Washington and much of the nation believe is virtually exhausted. Others, however, believe this resource, natural gas, is nowhere near exhaustion, and that crews like this one could find enough natural gas to take the crisis out of energy. What is this elusive monster called the energy crisis we hear so much about? For the past 4 years, people have debated over this without even really being sure what it is. President Carter has said he would like to solve our energy problems by leading us in the moral equivalent of war. The problem is, few can't seem to agree on the enemy. In this program, we're going to be hearing from some people who claim they can clear up a lot of the confusion about the energy crisis. They claim that the true nature of this crisis has been distorted and misrepresented to the needless detriment of most Americans. We're going to be looking primarily at just one energy resource, natural gas. Several years ago, we began hearing reports that we were desperately short of natural gas, that we had only a few years' supply left. Natural gas epitomized what came to be thought of as our essential energy dilemma, fossil fuels recklessly exploited to near exhaustion. But according to some, scarcely heard at first, that concept of the energy crisis is largely a hoax.
There's certainly enough natural gas, in my opinion, new natural gas can be found with our present methods of production to last us at least 50 years at our present rate of consumption.
Frank Pitts is a Dallas-based independent producer of oil and natural gas.
We haven't scratched the surface in the finding of new natural gas. There are 3 million square miles of potential areas in this country for oil and natural gas, onshore and offshore, ranging in depth down to as deep as 40,000 feet of sediments. But we've only actually drilled in 50,000 square miles. That's roughly 2% of the total potential area where we've drilled and found oil or natural gas.
If Frank Pitts is right, it could have a significant bearing on our energy situation. Natural gas currently supplies roughly a third of our total energy consumption. It's a mixture of various gaseous hydrocarbons, principally methane and ethane. Additional supplies of gas could greatly reduce our oil imports, and they would make less urgent the rush toward alternative energy sources, which are much more expensive or environmentally controversial. In the last several years, Frank Pitts has gone to considerable time and expense to publicize his opinions. His most effective tool has been this map. The red areas indicate existing natural gas fields. The yellow areas, Pitts believes, are favorable for production, and the orange areas, very favorable. New technology would be required to obtain some of the gas, most notably that which is called geopressurized methane, along the Gulf Coast. But, says Pitts, conventional drilling methods can furnish us with at least a 50-year supply.
On what do you base those claims?
Based upon my experience as president of an international geophysical company for 12 years, having made maps over all South 48 states, onshore and offshore, as well as Alaska. These studies certainly indicate to me, plus the fact that the U.S. geologists, in their memoir 15, volumes 1 and 2, cover the same thing that I'm just saying. So I'm not the only one. There are plenty of people, most of the people that are in the oil and gas producing business believe as I do.
There is a real gas shortage in the United States. In 1950, the U.S. had proven reserves equivalent to 25 times our annual production. By the mid-70s, the figure had fallen to about 10 times annual production. That reserve level was low enough so that actual production shortages occurred at times. Over 20% of supposedly firm contracts were interrupted. D.K. Davis is a geophysicist and a natural gas producer. The falling level of proven reserves, he says, has been misinterpreted as due to resource exhaustion, when the real culprit is government regulation.
But the reason that that curve has been dropping is because in 1956, for example, we had 58,000 wells a year being drilled. But because the price of natural gas has been held artificially low, there was no incentive to go out and drill for it. By 1971, we were drilling only 27,000 wells a year. We were not replacing those reserves as we drilled them. And in fact, from 1968 through 71, we were using natural gas three times as fast as we were replacing it. And the reason it wasn't being replaced is because the drillers could not go out and find the new reserves to replace what we were using at the price that the government held the ceiling price at.
Since 1954, the federal government has controlled the price which gas men such as Frank Pitts and D.K. Davis can receive for any gas they sell to be pipelined across state lines. And contrary to the opinion that gas finders have been drilling feverishly and coming up dry, the regulated price, which essentially did not change during the 1960s, has wreaked havoc in the gas industry.
And I went out of the business in the 60s because I couldn't make any money. Couldn't even replace what I was selling in the interstate shipment of natural gas. So I stopped drilling. And thousands of them, from 18,000 producers, dropped down to 4,000. That's why the wells haven't been drilled. We haven't found the new gas. And the demand for gas has skyrocketed.
The energy crisis is no game. Solving it will take international cooperation and individual effort. Closing the Energy Gap analyzes the true nature of the energy crisis and why it exists. Request your free copy of Closing the Energy Gap. Call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Pick up the telephone and dial a toll-free number, 800-423-4444, for your free copy of this brochure. If you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. Be sure to tell us the call letters of the station to which you're listening or watching at this moment, and it's free of charge.
You see up there, we have the substructure, and you see the mast, and the draw works, and the engines.
John Slensker is a contractor who owns 11 drilling rigs. Gas producers hire him to drill their wells.
If you'd like to, we'll walk around and look at these different things.
In 61, a group of us came to Dallas and put together a drilling company. Well, frankly, we thought at that time that the drilling business would get better and an opportunity for us maybe to get into it and build something out of it. But really, it got worse, primarily, I think, through federal policies and just no incentive to find oil and gas. So our group in 67 decided to sell out the company and go on to other things, and I took two of the rigs and started my own company in 67. So really, since 67, I've been in the business.
Has business started to pick up then?
Well, no, business at that time was even worse than it was in 61.
The gas crisis, say these men, is a crisis of price. The era of cheap gas may be over, but in regulation, they say, and shortages will cease. For example, the present interstate regulated price is $1.46 per 1,000 cubic feet. Proven reserves are slightly over 200 trillion cubic feet. One scenario that has been advanced is that at a price of $2.50 per 1,000 cubic feet, reserves would rise to 900 trillion cubic feet. A price of $3 might double those reserves. If the price ever rose above $3, it might become economical to at least begin tapping geopressurized methane. This is gas found along the Gulf Coast at depths of 15 to 20,000 feet, dissolved in hot salt water. The amount of geopressurized methane has been estimated at 20 to 100,000 trillion cubic feet, or 1 to 5,000 times our present annual consumption. Such gas might be expensive, but it belies the notion of the energy crisis as a crisis of exhausted resources. Not everyone believes deregulation would increase the supply of gas. President Carter has said prices above $1.75 per thousand cubic feet would not elicit significant additional supplies. Some critics say, however, that bureaucracies like the Energy Department Mr. Carter has created have a vested interest in pessimism. And in fact, the hypothetical price reserve levels just cited correspond roughly to estimates made by a government study last year, a study which the Carter administration was accused of suppressing. Meanwhile, those who think additional supplies are there have a big argument on their side. Texas.
We have an excellent example in the state of Texas that higher prices do increase the supply. We've increased in some of the areas the drilling by some 600% and the supply of gas by 3,000% in the same areas. And as that price rose, it gave the incentive for the drillers to really get in and drill the well. And we have created the supply. We've proved it in the state of Texas that we can produce more natural gas.
Gas produced and consumed inside Texas is not regulated by the federal government because it doesn't cross state lines. Since 1972, the Texas price for gas, now about $2 per thousand cubic feet, has been considerably above the regulated interstate price. But for Texas, the shortage is over, and Frank Pitt says the same thing could be done for the nation as a whole.
We'll find it. It's here. But we need to convince the public that it's here. We need to convince Congress that there is oil and natural gas, and particularly natural gas, to be found in huge quantities in this country. If the government would just step out and say, we will not regulate at all new natural gas. Go look for it, fellas. If you drill dry holes, it's the producer's cost. It isn't the government's cost.
Why does it require higher prices to obtain additional supplies? For one thing, the producers say there's the risk of drilling in new areas with uncertain geology. But more generally, they say tapping additional supplies will require drilling to deeper depths.
The average depth has only been about 4,600 feet, and yet most of the natural gas supplies are much deeper than that. 15 to 20,000 feet is where the huge supplies, every geologist in the world will say that that's where they are. But the cost of drilling doubles for every 2,800 feet that is drilled. For example, it costs more than twice as much to drill 13,000 feet as opposed to 10,000 feet.
One of the main reasons cost escalates so rapidly as the depth of a well increases is that in most cases, as the drilling proceeds deeper, it moves into formations that are under greater pressures and temperatures, and it simply takes longer to penetrate each foot of rock.
You say that geologists feel the large supplies are at deeper depths. I mean, larger than what we've already found, or what do you
much larger than what we've already found. At those kind of pressures, a great deal of natural gas can exist in a very small space, and practically all hydrocarbons at depths of 15,000 to 20,000 feet, under the heat and pressure at those depths, is converted into natural gas.
Cherokee County is East Texas, as you know, and the prospect is located.
Much of the increased gas supply in Texas has come about because higher prices have justified deeper drilling in regions that have for decades been producing gas from shallower depths.
This terrain around the Utley well.
Bobby Coleman is a geologist who works for Frank Pitts. He took us to a gas well recently completed by the Pitts Oil Company, 90 miles south of Dallas.
13,000 feet.
How did you happen to come look in this area then?
Well, we had done some work to the west in a gas field that is located to the west of us about 5 miles, and we followed the trend out in this direction, did some seismic and subsurface, and came up with the idea that this is where we wanted to drill.
Now, you did indicate that you may want to put another well adjacent to this particular one. You still feel there's gas in the area?
Oh yeah, we're real confident there is. We're drilling about 4,000 feet south of this well.
And when you went to pick up those leases, did you have any particular problem obtaining them?
Yeah, it was they're small tracts and mineral ownership. This series of valves and equipment that is behind us here is a what we call a Christmas tree in the oil field. It is actually where we drilled the well to 13,000 feet. We will produce gas from this Christmas tree into the pipeline.
What would a well like this cost to put down?
Well, the leases, we had 5,000 acres, including the seismic and the brokerage cost to put it together. It probably cost us $300,000. The well, the road to get into the well was about $80,000, and to drill the well and complete it and get it ready for the pipeline was about $1.8 million. So we're looking at $2.2 million, $2.3 million for total cost.
Now, do you expect to recoup all of your investment?
Oh, we certainly hope so, but we have no way of knowing right now where we will. We could still lose money even though we have a producing well.
Alexander Petrovich, Russian army officer, spent 4 years in Cairo, Egypt as a tank corps advisor. Eric Kaufman, industrial planner involved in automobile marketing in Hamburg, Germany. Charles Tex Williams, vital materials import manager for a major international firm based in Galveston, Texas. Hiroshi Omoto, management trainee at an international toy marketing firm in Osaka, Japan. Though all from different cultures, speaking foreign languages, and having varied occupations, these men share a common interest: energy. This booklet, Closing the Energy Gap, analyzes the true nature of the energy crisis and why it exists. For your free copy, call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
What about costs of energy in the future? The price for a gallon of gasoline for your automobile. Actually, we're looking at a microcosm of the entire panorama of the energy crisis in this program in concentrating on natural gas. But if you'll pick up the telephone and dial that toll-free number, we'll send you this free brochure immediately. The number is 800-423-4444. If you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. What so many people have found confusing in trying to understand the energy crisis is the wide disagreement as to how much gas and oil is left in the ground. A question bound to be confusing because no one really is sure of the answer with any precision. Fortunately, that may not be the most important question. What most people think is important now is not only how much is left, but what is it going to cost to get what is there out of the ground. It's for this reason that many members of one group, professional economists, have been among the most outspoken in calling the energy crisis a crisis of government policy. Policies that have prevented the price of oil, and especially the price of natural gas, from reflecting the true costs of getting at them.
I believe it is the single most important thing to do, and that is to relieve the energy market of the burden of regulation.
Dr. Edward Mitchell, one of the nation's leading energy economists, is a professor of business economics at the University of Michigan.
At the present time, the regulation primarily exists for the purpose of reducing the supply of energy. That is its main function. Obviously, that's not a function that it ought to be serving.
From the point of view of natural gas, what sort of pricing policy should we be following at the present time?
Well, I think most economists, in fact the overwhelming majority, would ascribe to deregulation. I don't think that's a very controversial question among professional economists. If you set a price below the market clearing price, the price that would be set in a free market, what you're going to get is a shortage, which is what we have now. All of those people who have to do without natural gas because the supply is reduced by the low price must then go and consume some substitute, whether it's imported liquefied natural gas or synthetic natural gas or oil or some other form of energy. And they will find that that alternative is considerably more expensive than the free market natural gas. So those people are considerably worse off.
In our governmentally regulated market, demand for gas exceeds supply. Among the more controversial ways we're filling that gap is by importing liquefied natural gas. Gas that is cooled to more than 200 degrees below zero and imported as a liquid from Algeria. LNG, as it's called, is controversial because some believe the technology is very risky And because if we were to deregulate our market, LNG at $4.50 per 1,000 cubic feet would likely be priced out of the market by new domestic gas at half the cost. Economists say that if competitive markets are allowed to operate freely, they will maximize our resources, that is, give us the most energy for our money. Regulation, even if designed to keep prices low, will ultimately cost us more. And as time goes by, the essential question of our national energy debate is shaping up to be this. Will we trust free, unregulated markets to maximize energy resources, or will we look to government agencies and their controls?
The thing about the markets, different from all these other institutions, is that the people who are determining what the market price of natural gas is, people who are guessing as to what future supply is going to be, are people who will lose a lot of money or make a lot of money depending on whether they're right or wrong. Energy bureaucracies in the past have made horrid predictions. They've generally been totally wrong about what's going to happen.
Professor Mitchell believes that while the government should support or conduct basic energy research, a free market should be left to choose which energy sources will actually be used. The market, he says, will be able to phase in alternate sources should a resource like natural gas become scarce and expensive.
As we actually do come to the point where natural gas becomes extremely scarce, extremely expensive, the price will rise. It will rise in advance of that because the people who go out and try to find it will see that it's not there and it's not likely to be there. The price will begin to rise, and as it rises, then investment money will be shifted toward alternative sources of energy.
Congressman Robert Krueger co-authored a bill last year to deregulate the price of new natural gas. The bill was narrowly defeated.
The truth of the matter is that that gas will be cheaper than foreign energy imported into this country. But it does mean that the political figure is voting for a higher price to producer in order to get a lower price to the consumer. Oftentimes, only the first half of that equation is a thing that is explained and understood. And oftentimes, in particular, the national media will only say, are you talking about higher prices? No, in the long run, you're really talking about lower prices.
Congressman Krueger believes that the energy question has ramifications beyond energy itself, and that the way we resolve the debate may have a great deal to do with the future of our economic and political system.
One of the reasons that I worked so hard on energy legislation to get less government regulation is that I wanted to establish that precedent in other areas as well. Talk to anybody who's involved in the energy business, and they will tell you they take the uncertainties of the marketplace any day over the uncertainties of government.
The government doesn't pay one single penny toward a dry hole. That's a total expense of the operator himself, the one that's drilling the well. And that's the way it should be. It's our business, it's our, as I view it, I don't want the government to underwrite or try to underwrite the profit or loss of my business. What I am saying, just turn us loose, let us go out and drill, let the marketplace determine the price, not you government regulators sitting in Washington.
Is drilling business a high-risk business, John?
It's going to be high risk. We haven't found the tools that can make it any other way. You still got to drill a hole in the ground. You still got to look for it. And you can do all the geology you want to. You can run all the seismic work you want to. But you still got to put a hole in the ground. I mean, if you make a good gas well, you stand to get your investment back. A dry hole, that's zero return. And you can't operate very long on zero return, except the federal government. I mean, they print their money, we don't print ours.
And one of the things, in my judgment, that has held back our economy in the last few years, in which our productivity has fallen so terribly, and which investment in the future has been much too small by our businesses, has come about because the people in positions to make those business decisions don't know what to expect from the government. They don't know what to expect tomorrow. And the surest thing to discourage risk and confidence in the future is governmental uncertainty.
As an illustration of the uncertainties involved in the politics of energy, gas men Pitts and Davis showed us a letter from Jimmy Carter to Texas Governor Dolph Briscoe, in which then-candidate Carter said, "The decontrol of producers' prices for new natural gas would provide an incentive for new exploration and would help our nation's oil and gas operators attract needed capital. Both Pitts and Davis talked with Mr. Carter personally before the election.
In the course of that conversation, I thanked him for the letter that he had written to the governors of Louisiana and Texas and Oklahoma saying that he would support deregulation of natural gas. And he suddenly launched into a lecture to me about why natural gas should be deregulated. He understood the problem. I was very impressed. And I did my best to get as many people in the state of Texas to vote for Mr. Carter as possible. I'm not sure why he has changed his position, except that he seems to have taken a position which is supported by some of the very liberal element in the Congress, people who are convinced that the best way for this country to operate is for government to control everything.
The best kinds of decisions are made when people have as much freedom to make those decisions for themselves rather than to have the government make decisions for them. I think that the administration's proposals are underselling and are too pessimistic about the capacity of the American people on their own to meet the future needs of this country.
We've looked really at only one energy resource, natural gas, and the people we've heard from represent really only one side of the energy debate. But by looking at one resource and one side, we felt we could at least better clarify what are really the essential issues America or any other nation must resolve concerning energy. The essential question may not necessarily be how near are we to running out of gas or oil. The essential question may be at this moment in time, what are the true costs of energy from various sources? What is the true cost of natural gas, a cost that takes into account the fact that there is less and less left in the ground? What is the true cost of coal, including the environmental costs of mining and burning it? What is the true cost of nuclear power, including, in a sense, the cost of risk? And so it goes. Our energy debate is and must ultimately be a debate over just who we trust, which institution, the free market, private enterprise, or corporate enterprise, or the government. The people we've heard from on this program feel that a free market, free interaction between producers and consumers can and should perform at least the central role. Others, and maybe you're one, feel that the free market is too flawed to correctly determine costs and prices in society's best interests. But those we've heard are, in a sense, simply asking that you not form an opinion on the panicky assumption that we're rapidly running out of traditional fuels. They're asking that you not condemn a free market simply out of ignorance as to how it operates, and that you not naively assume we're helpless to meet the energy challenge without additional bureaucracies. They've made a compelling case, because if they're right, not only can we solve our energy problems, but we can do it with a romantically appealing flair of individuality and self-reliance, the good old American private enterprise and ingenuity, keeping the glamour right where it really belongs, at the well, and not at a desk in Washington.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.